My name is Tim Bakke. I work for Microsoft, and I'm in the Microsoft Office division. What we're going to talk about today is this beautiful device. So who here has seen a Perceptive Pixel device already? So who's touched one? Okay, so there's a few people who are knowledgeable, or at least have some hands-on experience. So I'm going to kind of walk through sort of how we look at Perceptive Pixel and then some of the technology behind it. And because we've got a kind of a small group, feel free to ask questions. I think the guys want us to come up to the microphone if you have a question, or otherwise just shout it out. So one of the things that you'll notice when I kind of walk through the presentation is I'm going to stand right here and I'm actually interacting with the board. So when we talk about presenting with a Perceptive Pixel device, we typically will talk more in the terms of think like John King and not like Steve Jobs. There's no big image behind me with, you know, two words on it, and I'm not walking up and down the stage with a clicker in my hand. The idea is that because of the nature of the device, I can interact with it a lot more. And you'll definitely see that as I go through the presentation and into the demos. But this is sort of the standard, you know, where we sit in the world of work today within Microsoft. We're seeing a lot of new tools and new devices that are coming into the marketplace that people are, you know, leveraging for their personal use in the home, and then they're taking that into the business. So this proliferation of devices is enabling people to connect with one another, but that also connect to data. And a lot of that data typically will exist in the cloud. And certainly within the context of Microsoft, we want to make sure that that's a controlled environment. There's a lot of security behind it. You're seeing this sort of this conversation throughout most of the presentations that you've seen over the past couple of days. But the thing that I'm going to kind of talk about today is these three areas: devices, connecting, and cloud. And because what's happening is people are bringing their devices to work, or organizations are providing them mobile devices. It's less about work becoming a place where I go and access tools. Work is a place that I bring my tools with me. It used to be, you know, the blacksmiths had their setups in the villages, and then they went to the factory because they could build bigger things faster, and that's where the tools were. And that's kind of how the information age was. All the data and all the computers were in a place. Well, now we can pretty much work anywhere, and people have that expectation. So they want to work across devices, and our phone and our computer are really the two devices that are the most important to us. And we go to the office not to connect to the data anymore, but to connect with people. And so spaces that are designed for the use and access of technology and designed for communication and collaboration are becoming the movement within a lot of the office development and architectural spaces. So the idea of having one office for one employee is now changing to more open floor plans, more flexible work environments. So I can pop into a pod and work in that location because I'm in that building for, you know, a couple of hours, and then I move off to a conference room, and I go to another room, I go to another building. That is changing the dynamic of how people are actually designing space. And when we go to these meeting spaces, these are designed for us to be able to connect with people typically not in the room. They've got really expensive, beautiful technology in the room. Maybe they have video conferencing. Certainly they'll have, at a minimum, they'll have a phone. But what happens after all of this? What often happens is someone at some point reaches for one of these. This is the least technical device on the planet, but certainly in the IT world and in business in general, probably one of the most ubiquitous tools, right? One of these and a whiteboard. And what happens, especially in those conference rooms, is someone will stand up and say, "You guys on the phone can't hear this, but," or "see this, but," and they go to the whiteboard and they start writing on it. And now all the people in the room are in the know. They know what's going on, they're contributing, but the people who are on the phone are disconnected from that experience. So even though we're trying to put all this connectivity together, there's a break in what happens because of the analog devices that are involved. So our vision with Perceptive Pixel is to sort of break that model and provide technologies that allow people to communicate and collaborate a lot more efficiently. So the three pillars that we talk a lot about are ideate, collaborate, and present. And as I go through the presentation, the demo, we'll talk a little bit more about each of those individual pieces. Steve Ballmer in November said, Microsoft is a devices and services company. And if you've seen anything this week, you're seeing a lot of conversation about services through Office 365 and Azure and others, and the devices that make that happen. The 3.5 hour long lines for the Surfaces downstairs, and all the other devices that we're supporting to our OEM partners or creating. Perceptive Pixel and Surface sort of fit into that ecosystem of these are devices that, Microsoft is working to ensure that the experience that you have across services and across devices is consistent. So today we've got this really great engaging content connected across multiple screens. If you have a mobile, if you have a Windows phone and you have a Windows tablet or a even your Windows 8 computer, things are synced. You have access to data, especially if you're talking about Windows 8 on a desktop computer or a slate, being able to synchronize information across that, those individual devices as well. So I can go from my slate to my desktop, and the data as well as even some of the personal settings are synced across that. This has been a really important part of how we've looked at the architecture of the operating system, but then also how they fit that fits into the device ecosystem. And so what we're trying to do with Perceptive Pixel is ensure that that experience translates to the large screen experience, so that when I'm in a conference room and I need access to data, that data is available to me. So we have two models of Perceptive Pixel. We've got the 82-inch, which is this one here, which is sort of our flagship application. And we've got a 55-inch display. The 82 is designed really for the large boardroom experience. The 55 is really designed for the huddle spaces, the personal conference rooms, the smaller spaces. In fact, I'm one of the luckiest guys on my floor. There are a lot of people who are very jealous because I have a 55 as my second monitor in my office. And the way I use it, actually you'll see in the use case here, is it's my whiteboard. I actually called facilities and I said, take the whiteboards out, I don't need them. And we'll talk about why. So these devices peppered throughout the enterprise, throughout the different meeting spaces, help facilitate access to people, access to data, and access to the ability to ideate. A lot of people ask, what's the software that drives Perceptive Pixel? And just for short, PPI is short for Perceptive Pixel. A lot of people ask about what's the software that drives PPI. It's just Windows. So a machine is behind this device, and it's running its own operating system. And what are the productivity tools? People often ask that. Well, what things can I do with this device? Anything you can do in Windows, anything you can do in Office, you can do on a Perceptive Pixel. And I don't know if any of you saw the Garage series they're filming downstairs. I participated in a couple of the shootings for those this week. And we were talking about how Microsoft is making a lot of investments in touch across all of their software to support all the touch devices that are coming out. And so a lot of the tools that you are using every day, whether in touch mode or not, it's the same type of technology, it's the same software, the same applications you're using on a large screen device. And the Office store is actually a very interesting thing. Anything that's available in the Windows 8 store, you can run on PPI, obviously. Also, there's a lot of really interesting applications, I'm going to show one here shortly, that are coming up through the Office store that are becoming touch-enabled as well. So touch is becoming that lingua franca. This is the most common interface to a computer right now. I can't tell you how many times I've been in a room and someone's showing me something on their computer monitor, and they invariably go up to it and go, oh, wait, and they grab their mouse. They try to pinch and zoom on a non-touch monitor. And we expect that level of connection, that level of integration. So our mission is really to have one of these devices throughout the business to facilitate the communication collaboration amongst the people in the business. So I'm going to do a quick demo, and you'll notice I don't have a keyboard or a mouse anywhere. So I mentioned Windows 8. Everything that you see on the computer is just generated off of a CPU behind it running Windows 8. So the full Windows 8 experience, how many people have actually have Windows 8 deployed and are used to it? Okay. So you're used to, you know, the live tiles, the ability to pinch and zoom and drill into things. And all the applications that come with Windows 8 are available to you through a PPI. So what gets really interesting is when you start looking at some of like maps. It's sort of the ubiquitous application we have to show. This is, again, the application right out of the Windows Store. I'm going to clear this. Actually, we'll go to... So now we're in New Orleans. And a large screen device, I think, is perfect for a couple of different use cases, especially. Business intelligence, so data access, and visualizing data on maps. So geospatial is definitely one of those where you'll notice as I pinch and zoom in, the imagery is changing. I can rotate. I'll have to be smaller. I can rotate the map. And so you get a better experience of accessing that data when you can manipulate it directly. Now, I could do that on any touch screen. I could do that on a Surface. But when you blow it out to this scale, it gets you have a completely different perspective of how the data works. I'm going to show a different example of that, too. So this is another example of an app pulled out of the Windows Store. I can see pictures of folks from all over. Very rich quality. It's 1080p HD, so in 1920 by 1080 resolution. So you get a very deep, rich experience. If you've ever experienced touch on other devices, it'll typically be washed out. There's some differences in the fidelity. So with this device, you get that richness, which is highly demanded for folks in definitely the broadcast scenarios and also in the enterprise. So this is a photosynth image of San Francisco. What's great is, I don't know if it's great for, it's fun for me. I was showing this demo to a couple of folks, and I just basically went, I zoomed in, and I rotated, and I zoomed out, and I moved over here, and it was on an 82, and there was a guy who actually got a little motion sick. So if I can make someone motion sick with one of these, I'm like, that's a cool thumbs up. But again, being able to access, you know, sort of visualized geospatial information, whether it's flat on like a Bing map or rendered in an environment like this. So let's take a look at an example. This is another Windows 8 app. So again, trying to hit this pillar, anything you can do in Windows 8, you can do for a PPI. This is an application that was designed for someone in our manufacturing industry. It allows you to manipulate a 3D rendering of a CAD drawing using a file format called JT. So JT is basically is described to me as the JPEG of CAD. So you don't have to have the full CAD image, but you have the ability to, you know, zoom in, pan, touch, and I can actually remove pieces out of the, you know, layers out of the image. So I might want to zoom in on these calipers. And if I'm working with the design team, say, you know, we need to do something different with these calipers. Or I might zoom out and say, you know what, I'm a designer. I'm working on this project with some folks on my team, and we're going to build a different motorcycle. We're going to transform the industry by building one of the first electric, you know, high-speed motorcycles. So I might use this as a way to sort of start the conversation with my design team and say, okay, you know what? We don't need a muffler. We're going to change some of the things that are part of this. I'm going to remove, you know, these components. I'm going to remove the shroud so I can zoom in on the engine. And I'm going to take a snapshot of this and move over to one of my favorite productivity apps, OneNote. So this is just OneNote, the tool that we, you know, love to love. And I've got now my image in here. And I can resize it. And what's really great is all the manipulation I've done with my finger, when you bring in the stylus into the equation, now this becomes almost my whiteboard, right? So I can say, okay, you know what, guys, we need to re-engineer the engine. We're going to replace the shroud, put that back on. And as you see, as I'm writing, very high fidelity. There's no skipping. There's no, you know, no latency. The responsiveness is really good. So this becomes almost my project file. If you're familiar with OneNote, I can share this out to anyone, whether I'm using SkyDrive or SharePoint. So now my notes, my whiteboarding activity is now being able to share out to anybody. If I wanted to bring people into the conversation, I could fire up Link, you know, the Link desktop client, and start sharing my annotations with them, and they could see my screen as I'm doing that. So using OneNote, I've got, you know, project whiteboard, so I could actually have you know, some things on here. I'm gonna change the color back to black. And add to the conversation. And again, anybody who accesses this information, now it's on my slate, it's on, you know, any of the devices that I have available to me through OneNote. And I can even use it to collect images from the web to sort of say, these are the design guidelines I want to give to my designers. These are our people. This is, you know, this is the audience. This is the stuff that they do. This is the stuff that they love. And we need to use these as references for my presentation or for our designs. So even just the native applications that are built into Office and through Windows 8 have the ability to do touch straight out of the gate. So I've done this information, you know, so I've got my mood board, I've got my notes in OneNote. I'm going to fire up my project plan. So this is an application that's being, it's beta right now, but it'll be offered in the office.com store. And all of this is touch enabled and plugged right into SharePoint. So if you do any agile development or you have, you know, scrums, huddles, whatever the case may be, where you get a team together into a huddle space and you go, where are we on the project? Being able to say, okay, financial modeling is in progress. The design review, we're going to defer that. Brand strategy brief is in progress. Hey, actually, who's working on these? So I'm going to assign the market research to Tim. But I'm going to look for one of my colleagues. Paul Barr, who's an awesome program manager. I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to assign that information to him as well. I'm going to assign the environmental impact study to him. All this information is actually using SharePoint, using Active Directory behind the scenes. So if I go into my tasks, these show up in my tasks. If Paul goes into his tasks, they show up in his tasks. So even something as simple as a board like this, to go through task management really quickly, changes the game when you're putting it up on a device like this. So let's add a new task, again, very simple, using the touch keyboard that's integrated. Let's say we'll do financial study kickoff. Now I've added that task, and I can change the color of it. And say, because all of our finance tasks are green, I want to make that green as well. And I know that that's been kicked off. So I've got a lot of control over a tool like this, and there was nothing really necessary to build into it that was touch specific, other than, it's not a touch application. It's not a Windows application. It's running in a browser, and it's built on top of SharePoint. So we're building our bike. We've got these our tasks underway. We're going to do a couple of analysis of environmental data or demographic data. Who's seen GeoFlow this week? Everybody, probably. Great product overall, and phenomenal to show on a PPI. In fact, you've probably seen it run on a PPI. The PPI devices are one of the most popular demo tools within Microsoft right now, which is a lot of fun for us because we get to see the product used in a bunch of different ways. For those who haven't seen it, this is just a plug-in into Excel that allows you to visually map data onto a 3D canvas. And what's great is being able to play scenes that you've constructed. As you manipulate the information, as you manipulate the canvas, set up animations that allow you to sort of walk through or fly through that data. So again, kind of thinking about how these devices would be used in the context of like a QBR or a business review of some type, now I can show the people in my meeting this data in a completely different way. And I'm actually more integrated with the experience because I'm standing at the PPI and I'm interacting with the PPI than if I was just sitting at the table driving it from my laptop and it was up on a projector. Another great use case is sales projections. So we got a sales projection or a sales report here using PowerView. I'm assuming a lot of you have already seen PowerView, but it allows you to pull data from Excel and from back-end databases and access that information in a very sort of intuitive and unique way. But what's also great is being able to drill down into this data and add animations. So we're showing sales over time of different categories and everything like that. So everybody now can become almost a data visualization guru. Because it's in the tools that the people are using every day within Excel, within Office, you have these really great ways to visualize the data, but now you have a device that you can actually show it as well. And of course, if I tap on any of this, all of the cells change based on the information that I'm tapping on. But one of the other hero apps is certainly PowerPoint. And like I said at the top of the conversation, we look at PowerPoint less as a projection tool and more of an interactive tool. And so even little things like the swipes and whatnot that you use give a little bit more motion. Office 2013, PowerPoint 2013 allow you to do really cool transitions and animations. Some of them are useful. Some of them, like the origami one, I don't know if you've seen that, where it takes the slide and kind of munches it down into a crane, the crane flies away. Don't know if I'd use that in a business meeting, but I would definitely use swipes like this. So, you know, now we got the mission for our motorcycle. Our design team has met, and they've come up with a couple of design examples. They're wanting to talk about the manufacturing process and how they're going to have to retool the floor of the factory. So using the inking that's available in PowerPoint and our stylus, I can, you know, start annotating right on the screen. Very high fidelity ink, say, you know, retool. And make, you know, annotations on the screen, all this sort of stuff. And again, if I'm showing this, you know, over a link session, all the people are able to participate. I can say, you know, John, what do you think? Do we need to, you know, change the TC area at all? He's like, no, I think that we're going to be fine with that. So that's a, you know, check mark. Whatever the case may be, I can jot all my notes for this, you know, over here, and continue on with my presentation. So here's demographic information, our sales projections. But if I wanted to go back to the manufacturing slide, I've got the ability to do that. So one of the things within 2013, again, native touch experiences built throughout Office and Windows allows me to stop the presentation, pinch, see all of the different slides that are part of it. And if I had sections set up, I could drill down into those individual sections. But I want to come back here and I want to say, okay, you know, go back to my notes, whatever the case may be, add to it. Finish my presentation, and I'm at the end. This is an important part. So where OneNote allows you to keep all of that information in your OneNote files, so if I'm using OneNote as sort of a digital whiteboard, and I'm able to keep all that information and share it all out, now PowerPoint also has that capability to keep all of the inking inside the PowerPoint file. So as I was basically annotating on here, I have the ability to keep track of all of the notes that I had for that and make that part of the record of that PowerPoint. So yeah, I'm going to keep that. And now I can save that and send it out to any of the people that were in the meeting or who missed the meeting. So any questions yet? Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. So there's two ways to do the erase function. You can actually come down here and I'll put it in pen. Oops. Oh, because I have the stylus. I can just actually erase on the screen. It's not erasing on the screen. It says eraser. Oh, there we go. Now we're in eraser mode. I think I've confused PowerPoint. I'll show here. So there's two ways to erase. Within PowerPoint, PowerPoint isn't designed for this notion of pen and touch. And I'll explain why that's important in a few minutes. But OneNote natively recognizes this is a stylus and this is a finger. And so I can manipulate my environment with gestures and then do my annotations here. The stylus has both the lasso tool so I can actually move my ink around. So if I were saying, you know, design note and I wanted to move that to a different part of the notebook, I could very easily do that. Or if I wanted to erase, the button on the back allows me to erase any of the inking. So I don't have to go back to, you know, tapping and putting it back into erase mode. PowerPoint is making some adjustments to make that possible. But OneNote is a perfect example of having an erase function and the lasso function built into the stylus, and the stylus recognize immediately what capabilities it's capable of doing. Mm-hmm. This is actually a plug-in to SharePoint from the office.com store. It's in beta. It hasn't been released to the public site, but it's just written for SharePoint. There's no plug-in or app.
So, say it's in the office.com store.
It's in our internal office.com store. It will be in the office.com store. Sorry. I'm going to get to the technology in just a few minutes. I'm going to get to that as well. I'm also going to get to that. So any questions about the demo or any of the functionality within Office, inking, all that sort of stuff? Okay. So PPI was started in 2006 by the gentleman by the name of Jeff Hahn, and Jeff is a titan, a revolutionary guy in the space of touch. So he did a TED talk in 2006. At the time, I was a UX designer, ran development for a company that was building a hosted UC platform, and because I had this background in design and in UX, I saw that and I literally came out of my shoes. I was just like, this is really cool. You have to remember, this was a year before the iPhone hit the market. So this guy has been working on how massive multi-touch and how people interact with computing devices via touch for a long time. And we acquired PPI in 2012. If you're at the WPC last year, you saw that announcement and saw Jeff on stage. Jeff and the PPI division, or PPI team, are all part of Office. And part of the, you know, he moved from New York, where PPI was based, to Redmond, and he runs all of our software and hardware R&D. So he's still very involved. And what's great about him is that he definitely takes a very detailed perspective on the hardware and the software and how people work with it. And so if you haven't had a chance to touch it, you can't experience touch without touching. And so if you have experience with large multi-touch devices or just large touch devices in general, you've probably had a negative experience. But when you go up to a device like this, you'll notice the difference immediately. And people have described this as amazing, beautiful product, elegant. I did a session in Redmond a few weeks ago, and the guy was like, I've seen all this stuff before. I had very high expectations, and you met them. So that idea and the history behind PPI, I often ask, who's seen a PPI? You've all kind of raised your hands. I'm assuming it's here at the trade show. Have you ever seen a PPI before? At WPC? Okay. If you've seen CNN and John King's Magic Wall, that's a PPI device. So the history of Perceptopixel, they have a lot of experience in the broadcast industries and in defense, because those two industries in particular, as well as medical and oil and gas, those two industries in particular have to have good quality responsive stuff. So the experience of touch is one where I was kind of alluding to it earlier, where we have devices, and we sort of have this expectation of what touch should feel like. And it's sort of on this spectrum of happy versus sad. We have, you know, our phones. We have an experience with our phones. It's probably pretty high, right? We have our tablet devices, and the experience with that is probably pretty high. Oops. With large screens, probably our experience isn't as good. And so what we're really trying to nail with getting Perceptopixel in the market and the customers that we're talking to is ensuring that that experience is consistent across the board. That not only the data that you're using or accessing, like I showed in the demo, but how you're accessing that across these touch devices is consistent and the experience is good. So I showed the erasing and it worked that time. So going into a little bit more detail about the technology, I mentioned there are 55 and 82-inch pen and touch displays. So the pen, we recognize the difference between pen and touch at the hardware level. The software, obviously, notice the difference between what PowerPoint does and what OneNote does. The software has to be designed to make the recognition as well. Immersive touch first experiences. You've noticed I have not touched a keyboard or a mouse throughout this entire demonstration. Because it's designed for touch first. And most devices, even Office, are designed with that in mind. It's a Windows-approved device in that, obviously, Windows 8 runs very well on it, and it can use both the pen and touch or mouse and keyboard if necessary. The defining factor between this device and others is PROCAP versus the other technologies, and I'll just call them the other technologies. This is the largest projected capacitive device that we're aware of. At 82 inches, it uses the same technology as your smartphone. It uses the same technology as your slate. Other technology companies provide a different level of technology. Many have, you know, camera arrays built into the bezel. So what that does is it creates a lot of problems for people who are actually trying to interact with the screen, interact with the data. You can't get true multi-touch. You can kind of get maybe two fingers on it. It uses a camera to either fire a screen across it, or will use sort of your finger as an XY coordinate to tell the computer what it does. It's cheap. It's commoditized. Typically, you'll have the bezel will be large to accommodate the gap necessary for the cameras. These devices are being used in environments where they're flush mounted with the wall. So you get a very integrated experience, and the experience is a lot more kind of immersive and built into the huddle space. Because of the way this technology works, you'll see several kind of what we'll call pre-touch. So I may put my finger near the device, and it will recognize that as a touch because I broke the pane of the cameras. So it's not really giving me, I wasn't trying to touch it, but it's thought I did, right? You get all these different things like palm rejection. I talked about the false trigger issues. especially infrared, is very sensitive to lighting. So this can be placed in any location. But some of those systems, if you have, we actually was talking to a manufacturer who was using infrared in a store environment, in a retail environment, and the lighting in the store had to be redone to accommodate the touch screen. And I talked about the bezel preventing you having sort of like this really kind of smooth, elegant industrial design. And often these products, all the different negative touch points and everything like that, create a wrong output for the computer to recognize. So I'm going to show a little video that kind of shows what this means. This is using an infrared technology. You actually may have seen it. You can go out to YouTube and type in touchscreen fail on the news, and you'll see a lot of examples of this happening on air. Well, for John King and the folks that are on stage, they can't have that happen. If we intend to have these in the CEO's boardroom, we can't have this type of experience for them. This is using infrared. And it's the same experience. Jeff's bringing up some images and everything like that. I'm able to move them around, but then you'll notice things are flipping, kind of weirdly. It's not true multi-touch. You're not getting that full experience that projected capacitive gives you. Because of what I do, I was at I travel a lot. I was in an airport, and there was a big news organization, a national brand, had this news wall in the terminal. And you could walk up to it, and you could start interacting with news. And the idea was great. I could pull up video clips, and I could do all these different things. But the experience wasn't very good. And I was standing there, and someone came over, a father and a young daughter. And especially kids immediately get it. They want it. I mean, they're used to touching things. I can tell you, my son's 12, so he's already, very capable. But I've heard of young kids who walk up to the TV and go, TV! TV! They're using speech. Or they're walking up and they're tapping things, expecting it to react to them. Because that's the interface that they expect. So this father and daughter walked up. And they started playing with this thing. And it was just wonky. It was like, they're holding and trying to pull, and things just weren't working. He said, well, maybe this part isn't right. It isn't working. So they walked around the corner, and same experience. And the father said, well, I'm sorry, it must be broken. And they walked away. For that news agency, that's a huge brand hit. So if you're in the business of having something that's, in front of a lot of people, and you're trying to create an immersive brand experience, you have to be very cognitive of what type of technology you're going to use to do that. So I kind of talked about the comparisons between the two different technologies, from PROCAP to optical. But the one thing that I'm going to show here in a little bit is this notion of near zero parallax. This has one of the largest planes of Gorilla Glass in the market. So I've threatened to throw pop cans at it and cups and everything like that. People wrestle me to the ground, but it's designed for not the durability or it's in a public space, but because we wanted to make sure there was very little. It's only 2 millimeters thick, very little between the sensors and the fingers, right? So there's this thing called parallax. You may have experienced if you've gone to the ATM. And worked, with a touchscreen on an ATM, you may press on the button, and it actually, you meant checking, and it goes into savings. Because there's this gap between where you've pressed and where the computer recognizes that you've pressed. So that error gap, or that distance, is called parallax. With our device, there's near zero. It's really just the, very, very small. So to maintain that, that fidelity of where I touch with the stylus or my finger is exactly where the computer recognizes it. So I'm going to do another demo. Sure. This is one of my favorite tools. This is basically a utility that we built to kind of understand what's going on behind the scenes. This is what the PPI sees. So all of these touch points are, you know, are seen by the sensors and are pressure sensitive. So I don't know if you'll be able to see it on the screen or not. But as I push more, the line gets bigger. Same thing with the stylus. As I press, I get a better line. And so that's the zero parallax. You'll see if you come up here, where I tap and where the pen point is almost right on top. I mean, it's on top. So the ability to use pen and touch at the same time, the system recognizes all of that data. What was also great is that it recognizes this is a finger, this is a stylus, and this isn't. So if I put my hand here, it's throwing all that data away. This isn't a finger. Who manipulates stuff by going like this? You know, not many people. So if I have the ability to move things around with my fingers and do my annotations, I can actually do both at the same time. We could have, you know, afterwards, if you want to come up and feel it, I would seriously suggest you do. I've brought people up like 5 deep, 10 deep, and all people are on there going like this. We did a presentation where we were doing this part of the demo, and there was a guy sitting right over here who was, you know, watching, and he just did one of these to see if it would mess us up, and it didn't, obviously. So this really gives you a lot of that fidelity of the experience. Questions about anything I've covered so far? And we're getting to the specs here shortly. Yes?
How solid is it?
Solid?
Yeah, in terms of shock or you said you threatened to throw something at it.
I thought about it. Someone would I'd be fired if I threw something. But it's not ruggedized in the sense that it's like a tough book or, you know, it's open. You wouldn't want to put it in an outside area without, you know, a lot of kiosk work built into it. But it's definitely designed to be used, but I wouldn't say abused.
Yeah, okay. But it can be mounted as a tabletop, right?
We have seen it both mounted vertically and then also as an interactive table, especially for sand table sorts of scenarios. Everything is Windows. Everything is Office. So there's nothing. There are you know drivers for the PPI to make sure you understand all this. But there's nothing that the Office or Windows teams had to do specific to the PPI. So there's no changes made to the operating system other than the drivers. Microsoft has taken the tack that touch is an expected experience, especially across mobile devices, and so. Exactly right.
Good.
Exactly right. Sir?
So the touch pen differentiation
Surface uses other technologies. And so, you know, the pen and the display, you know, utilize, you know, proprietary hardware that the operating system needs to understand. Sir? And actually, perfect segue. So there's two pieces to the video equation. DVI is the input and output. So this device is actually plugged into a splitter that's plugging, you know, displaying all of this up here. So standard video endpoints. So DVI, USB. USB is to basically connect the touch functionality to the CPU. And then AC power, it also has USB hub and a network cable in. So you can actually manage it remotely if you wanted to plug down to Ethernet. Sir?
Is DVI a design decision that goes back to 2006?
Great question. I will request, I'll say, I won't say anything. Same thing with the 82, that DVI is the input, basically the same thing. There is an antenna for the 82 that goes with the stylus. The styluses actually are have their own unique ID. So what's interesting about that is, as I can have multiple people up on the screen doing multi-touch, I could also have multiple styluses paired to the device. And because it has its own unique ID, I could actually have people, you know, if you develop the application to do it, write, and you would know it's Tim writing versus Mike writing versus John writing, whatever the case may be. So from the display connections, obviously for DVI, you can use other HDMI ports. We've driven them off of surfaces all the time. So there's a lot of different ways that you can connect to the device. But right now, DVI is the input. From the USB side, it's just a large and a medium-sized USB connector. So from a computing perspective, we have recommended specifications on our website. Basically, you need a fairly beefy video card, but not like a gaming PC. It's not that necessary to have something that high-end. NVIDIA Quattro is sort of the standard. We use, like I said, we've driven them off of laptops. You can connect, obviously via wired to the device, and as the technology matures, I'm sure you'll be able to connect in other ways as well. Yes. Yeah, obviously if you've got, a subpar video card, you're going to have a subpar experience. It does improve. Like say the Excel GeoFlow rendering, it's going to be that way with any device. But, if you've got a crappy card and you're doing a lot of like 3D rendering or whatever the case may be, you're going to have a less than quality experience. So these are uses that we're seeing fairly popular. Although this isn't me, this is basically one of my primary use cases. This actually was shot at the Office 365 launch in Bryant Park earlier this year. And people were just walking up and picking up the stylus and, writing notes on the screen because they got it. They understood what they needed to do. They had a big graffiti wall that people were signing their names on as part of the launch event. So whether it's in a boardroom or kind of a huddle space, kind of on the fly, or more in that personal space, the idea of being able to, come up with ideas, come up with strategies, use different inking technology or inking applications to do so, share that information with others inside the room or out, and then present that information via PowerPoint is sort of one of the key pieces that we're trying to land here. I'm actually going to go and show. So what's one of the most ubiquitous things you do on a whiteboard? Network diagram, right? So even if I did that network diagram in Visio, having the ability to, showcase it on a screen like this and say, okay, what do we need to do? Well, we're not doing anything on the edge. We can get rid of that. We need, whatever the case may be, more here. That's true. I could do inbound video requests with the edge. We're not doing any SIP connectivity. We're not doing any outbound voice. Whatever the case may be, and I can't keep all my notes and everything like that. And again, now it's all part of the record of the document. Same thing. So the idea is whatever you wanted to be able to throw up there, whatever your industry is, utilizing just something as simple as PowerPoint and being able to show that is a pretty compelling use case. So I think I talked about the collaboration. little training. You've got Office, it's Windows, it's stuff that you use every day. You're walking up and you're using technology that you are already familiar with. Other technologies typically will have some type of software layer between you and the input devices. Especially in the education market, teachers are having to learn new software to be able to do basically everything I've done just in Office. With this, you have all the functionality that any of the Office products or Windows would provide, including things as simple as sharing, saving, and printing. Talked about the software, walk up and use scenarios, and the history. So now, more questions. Yes, sir. Anything you can do with Windows 8, you can do with this. So the idea is like, you know, let's say I wanted to create something that might be in a kind of a brand immersion experience sort of use case where I've got, you know, information flowing on the screen. It's kind of an interesting, almost digital signage experience. But as I walk by, the Kinect recognizes, oh, there's somebody there. And it changes and it grabs my attention and draws me in to now manipulate things on the screen. That would be, I think, a really good use case for integrating Kinect into that. But you know, often people say, what type of software? Anything you can do in Windows? Sir? You know, I'm not sure about the iPad side, but anything that can be plugged in through DVI, you know, Paul, you might know on the Apple stuff, but.
Rights management is an issue with this generation of the hardware. So if you have DRM protected content, I think from the PS3, for instance, rights managed, there will be some challenges there. But other than that, if it's a signal, it'll take.
And you would lose all the touch functionality. So now you have a really big, beautiful TV.
Well, as far as making the case for, I imagine, these awesome
media. For you, they're free today. No, $99 downstairs with the voucher. So they're all commercially available. And in fact, for more information, you can go to. But if you're a Microsoft-managed partner or customer, you can talk to your account team and work with them on it. Or you can go to PerceptiPixel, microsoft.com/office/PerceptiPixel, or just PerceptiPixel.com will work as well. But to answer the direct question, when we acquired PerceptiPixel, the 82 was almost $100,000. And the 55 was about $35,000. The 82 is now $21,000. And the 55 is now $7,100, so $7,100. So from 100,000 to 22, from 35 to 7, basically. And available direct through Microsoft. We have, we're still building our channel, so we'll have distribution partners, but right now all orders are going through Microsoft. SkyDrive or whatever. Yeah, so as part of the training, we want to make sure that, you know, it's just like you walk into a conference room and you plug in. What you have on your screen is what's going to show up. So if you log in with your credentials and everything like that, you just need to be cautious of that fact and certainly log out of the device when you're done. So there are definitely ways to get access to the information that way. It also, you could project up onto it, and if you have the drivers on your PC, you could have the full touch functionality built into it. Yes?
Let's say we have at least one or two pretty stupid employees who actually draw on it using their regular tablet.
After you fired them, I would... I left enough time for questions and travel. We're about 2:30. Because I know you guys have like almost back-to-back sessions. So, but come up and feel it. and experience. I'll throw up ProCrop Viewer. But to answer the question directly, there's a film over the face of it that gives you a very positive sense, you know, touch sense to it. So it doesn't feel like you're going over glass. In fact, I did a demo last night. I'm setting this up down on the show floor after the expo is closed, and some people walk by. I can't tell you how many times this happens. That's really cool. And I basically did a 20-minute demo for them, and I threw up the ProCap viewer, and the woman was on it like this. She said, you could sell this to psychologists. You could sell this to occupational therapists because it just feels really nice. So that film, if they drew on it, cleaning it, I mean, it depends on what they drew on it with, but we actually have a special spray that we use to clean all of these because of the film that's on it. So you don't want to have harsh cleansers or that sort of stuff because you'll start to impact the device itself. It's not like you just peel it off.
Yeah.
That's right. Exactly right. Quick turnaround, though. make sure you back up your data. Yeah, we almost suggest that. Exactly. Yes, sir. Absolutely. So if let's say I'm on a link meeting and we're sharing a PowerPoint and we want to ink on it, I could ink on this side and give that person presenter rights and give them control, and then they could ink on it as well with their stylus. So whatever input device they have on their end, they have the capability to interact. What's interesting is sort of the double-edged sword. Whatever the technology, whatever the software allows, the hardware can do, right? And so if the software allows that, you'll start to see, you know, more and more of that use, and you're going to start to see more and more software people designing for that use case, you know? So the apps that I've shown that, again, not to bash PowerPoint, but just the differences between one and the other, all that's a software choice, not a technology choice, a hardware choice. Other questions? My favorite color is blue. Yep. So PPI, their model before the acquisition was they sold the hardware and software. And so the Magic Wall software and all that sort of stuff was proprietary and written for the device at a very, very deep API level. So the short answer to the question is that software is no longer available, and Windows and the Windows APIs are the primary interfaces for software developers because, again, of that investment that we're making, not only just in the technology, what Windows is doing, what Office is doing, but what DPE and the developer teams are doing to teach developers to create touch applications. Anything else?